Good morning. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inakai-Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to this dance space. Well, it is a good, good morning as we sit inside of the CIUT Sound of Your City fundraising campaign, and we want to thank you for your support of our show and the CIUT station. Whether you are a longtime follower of our program or new to the show, serving in collaboration with all of you out there continues to be a great honor. Now, the station is abuzz this week as we welcome your calls, emails, and your in-person visits to the station during the campaign. Your kind words and your thoughtful donations are received with much gratitude, and they will also assist in such areas as the development of our broadcast studios, tech training, research development, and will continue to help us bring you informative and meaningful content. We've got love for you folks. To join our family of collaborators and to share a donation of any amount during the campaign, you can call CIUT now at 416-946-7800 or toll free at 1-888-204-8976, or you can donate online at CIUT.fm. And while donating, share that you're tuning in to Turnout Radio. Well, as we flow into the rhythms of today's episode, we invite you to come in and join us for another conversation about the stories that live both on and beyond the stage. A conversation that today will speak to resistance, revolution, fashion, and all that is dandyism. My guest this hour previously shared a Rwandan proverb with me, which states the following: if you have enough wood to burn, you will eat a well-cooked meal. This is a proverb that has spoken into their life in profound ways. Coming up on the show, Patrick Ziza is in the house. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with Patrick Ziza. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inakai-Hamilton. My guest today, Patrick Ziza, is a multidisciplinary performing artist and a dance theater maker of Rwandan heritage. They create a variety of work that explores the themes of African traditions and cultural norms, investigating the effect that they have on people from the global south who were born or have lived in Western communities most of their lives. Now, Ziza's work aims to engage with unconventional performance settings and platforms to promote visibility and accessibility, which strives to create engaging and inclusive pieces that challenge the preconceived ideologies about issues such as masculinity and identity, among many others. And it is now my great pleasure to welcome Patrick Ziza to the show. Ziza, welcome to Turnout Radio. What a great honor it is to have you joining me today. How are you?
Yes, I'm really well. Thank you so much, Nicole. And what an amazing introduction. Thank you so much. I've never heard kind of really eloquently that, being introduced in that way. But yeah, thank you so much. It kind of reminded me that, this is what I stand for and this is what I do, which is great. It's nice to hear when someone else say it that loud. So yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. You are joining us today from Northeast England.
Yes, I'm joining you all the way from Gateshead, very small town in the northeast of England, very close to Newcastle. So I guess many people might know Newcastle than they would recognize Gateshead. But yeah, it's very close.
And how long have you been in Gateshead?
So I've lived in Gateshead since 2003. And some people are like, oh, wow, you lived in Gateshead all this time. I was like, yes, it's brilliant. It's great. It's small. It's compact. It's easy to actually work here because it's not a big city. But I've also had the privileges of traveling and working in different places. So I'm really, really honored to always come back to Gateshead because I just love it. I get to put my head down and work.
Well, I hope to visit you there one day. Never been.
Yes, you are welcome. I mean, you're very, very welcome. I think you would love it. You would love the people, the Geordies. They are called the Geordies. They're really lovely, very friendly people. You'll be welcomed. And it's really nice. I would say come in the spring. Come in the spring or going to summer. Otherwise, yeah, the winters are long here.
Well, my bags are packed, Ziza.
Anytime. 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 Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. And prior to the interview, we had a lovely chat. You began to speak with me about your many travels. And so I'd like to revisit some of those childhood moments. Can you talk to us about your journey and those moments that you reflect upon today?
Yeah, so I was born in Rwanda originally. I guess the history of Rwanda obviously is a troubled one, particularly in the 90s, 94, there was a genocide. So I was 8. And because of that, obviously, a lot of people fled the country. And my family was that, part of those people who left due to the war. But we moved around in Tanzania, then we moved back to Rwanda, and then we moved back to Nairobi, and then we ended up coming to Britain. But I guess my formative years, moving out, let's say 94, and then coming back in 95, 96, and then living in Rwanda for another 5 years, that was really that time that is very much vivid in my head, because I was then going to 12, 13, and also remembering the creativity that was happening around us, being kids, and also being really encouraged to also always be part of creative activities. I'll be in choirs, I'll be in dance groups for the youth, and then within that we would also always do performances let's say christenings, weddings, anything that brings people together in the kind of the small towns and the villages. And sometimes we'll also do little competitions. And yes, yeah, so I just remember really being very young and always being at the front of the line as we perform, and just being this, I guess I was very short, but also a little bit, you know, always smiling. And they always wanted me to be in the front. So those memories are really kind of, as I remember that vividly, you know, just dancing and singing and being in a choir with my siblings as well, who are much, much younger than me, and always have to look after them. So yeah, this was fantastic times.
And in that space, when you reflect upon those memories, Cesar, you had shared with me that there was a Rwandan proverb that your mother had shared with you, which states that if you have enough wood to burn, you will eat a well-cooked meal.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the proverb?
Yeah. So the proverb actually, also in Kinyarwanda, it's, I think I would say it in Kinyarwanda just for anyone to appreciate that. So it says, ufite inkwi nyinshi arya ibihiye. So it's the idea of, if you have enough wood to burn, you will eat a well-cooked meal. So this, and the way my mom explains it, is this way of absorbing life, observation of life, learning from your surrounding, your environment, the people around you, but also knowing how to discern, you know, the things you have to give energy, the things you don't have to give energy, because ultimately that's what sustains you. That's what brings you enough life experiences to be able to survive, but also to forge relationships with others. So, but you have to have enough wood. You have to have enough, and be willing to listen, and but also, which actually also links to this idea of Ubuntu. You know, this idea of, you know, humans always learning from others, but also doing it as a community. So this way of, yes, you're part of a community, but you also have to be individual within that community. And I guess being an individual is also what sets you apart, and it's also what's what makes you interesting. So yeah, my mom, when my mom was explaining what that meant, I was like, wow, this is actually so rich. But also can also be referred as a way of accumulation of wealth. So this idea, if you have enough wood, that means if you have enough knowledge and skills, that can also apply to that you will eat.
I reflect upon the philosophy of Ubuntu and these words from Nelson Mandela, which have blessed me greatly. May I share that with you?
Please, absolutely. Yes.
The words go as follows. In the old days, when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village, and he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people would give him food and entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not mean that people should not enrich themselves. The question, therefore, is, are you going to do so in order to enable the community around you and enable it to improve? These are the important things in life. And if one can do that, you have done something important, which
Absolutely.
Will be appreciated. What are your thoughts?
Oh my gosh, that is so profound. I love that actually. And Ubuntu philosophy is something that is, that actually inspires most of what I do. And there is actually a piece of work that I'm still researching, that it's called Ubuntu. It's also a performance. It's a performance work. I mean, I'm interested in it being a performance installation, but it also uses the Kanga textile, which is this very, it's called a cheap cloth that is easily found on the east coast of Africa, and it's worn by women and men, and it's a very beautiful, colorful, but it's also inspired by this cross culture between the Arab world and the east coast of Africa. But the Kanga is so interesting because it also has inscription. So you've got this piece of clothing that also has inscription, and that inscription always have proverbs. And women wear it as a way of speaking to each other and by telling each other how they feel. So I thought it was such a beautiful way of using material and using the philosophy of Ubuntu as a way of speaking to the philosophy of Ubuntu through the community, this idea of I am because you are. You know, without you, I wouldn't be able to exist, but we can also communicate this message amongst each other. So I thought that was very, very beautiful. It's a project that I'm still interested in exploring. But yeah, Ubuntu is just, I'm getting goosebumps as I'm talking to you about it. It's just something that I'm very much, I guess it's part of my livelihood. You know, I go by Ubuntu, and also Kinyarwanda has actually a prayer that starts with Ubuntu, and then it continues. So I remember that as well. When I was young, we always used to do that prayer with my grandparents.
Can you share that prayer?
Yes, I hope I can remember it. So it's Ubuntu. Kumwami wacu w'Imana n'urukundo rwe rwera bibane natwe twese ubu n'iteka ryose. Amen. Which means the humanity, actually I think it starts with the grace. Ubuntu is almost like we are all invited to, I'm trying to translate this because I don't think I can do it justice trying to put it in English, but it's a kind of, in a nutshell, is the Ubuntu is the credo, this idea of holding the humanity, but to protect the humanity, and therefore wishing everyone to have this, I guess, credo amongst or around them for now and forever. That's how I would try to really work hard to translate that. But I remember that. This is the first time I recited that in like 15 years.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. Cesar. Yeah. And yeah. Ubuntu, speaking to the concept of common humanity, mm-hmm. oneness, you, yeah. Cesar, and me, both, us, yeah. we, all of us,
yeah,
encapsulating this knowingness that we are all connected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That when one suffers, we all suffer.
Yeah.
That when one celebrates, we all celebrate.
Yeah.
And it affects us all.
Mm. It really does. It really does. And I think I would say I now in my life right now, I appreciate the philosophy even more, because I would say that we live in a society that is very much individual, each to their own. You know, you chase your dreams, you know, you wanna, you know, propel ahead, but within that you find that oftentimes you're also lonely, or you don't have a supportive system of a good core group behind you, because you're always busy doing something, because you're always pursuing something. So now that I'm more really in tune with the Ubuntu philosophy more than ever, because I can see the benefit of having a good supportive group of people, you know, a community, I would say, you know, just really having a community. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to want something from them other than just communication. How are you doing? Checking on someone from time to time. And yeah, so now it's more valuable for me, the Ubuntu philosophy.
Wonderful. Well, we are going to take a break and be right back with more of Cesar right after this. The Sound of Your City fundraising campaign is on now, running from May 26th straight through to June 1st. CIUT Radio is a unique platform offering advertisement-free open platform programming. Your contributions support our station and our show to grow from the roots up. And we couldn't do it without you. To share your donation, call CIUT during the campaign at 416-946-7800 or toll-free at 1-888-204-8976 or donate online at CIUT.fm. CIUT is a registered charitable organization offering tax receipts to donors. When donating, check out the donation levels that can also provide you with the opportunity to become a member of CIUT and to access some retro swag. We have more of Turnout Radio coming up right after this. Ziza, during the break, you had shared so beautifully with me about community and what it means to rest in community.
I think I often say that I actually have a privilege of having the African kind of heritage, which I've also lived, as in I've really lived in that setting, in that environment. And then I also live currently in the Western environment. So being able to coexist between these two places has really given me the privilege to understand, for example, what a community is in the African setting. That I think if aspects of that community were to be adopted in this setting, in this current environment that I live in, would really be beneficial. But then I also understand that because it's not the system here, oftentimes when I speak to my friends who were born here, they think the idea of Ubuntu and community, this idea of you are because I am and we need to support each other, they see it as almost being an intrusive. It's too much, you know, waking up with someone, you always, and I kind of try to tell them that's not the case. The philosophy of Ubuntu is being able to rely on a neighbor if anything was to go wrong, or if you need something and they happen to have it. But because of that, there's also this element of communication that is constant, because you know you can check on your neighbor every other 2 days if you don't see them to ask how are you doing, but it's not intrusive. You still have that space to anchor yourself as an individual, but it's knowing that you can rely on someone if anything was to if you need anything or if you needed really support. And I think I also remember when my mom also tells me that when there was dispute in the area, you would actually congregate, you bring everyone and you know why do we have to involve law? We have people, let's go to the people, let's bring people together and let's try to settle these the dispute. But it's definitely nothing to do with the communal almost living, like this idea of, oh, we are, you just, it's too intrusive. It's, for me, that's not how I see it. So yeah, I'm always trying to explain the, you know, the difference and between what they think and what I, the benefit of what I think Ubuntu can give them.
Yes, yes. You spoke about the creative spaces that you were often encouraged to be in as you were growing up. When you reflect on the philosophies and proverbs and those creative spaces, can you talk about how those considerations may have informed the practices that now are a part of your existence?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yes, I think there are intrinsic qualities, I guess, that I have as a human being. And then there is the need to also reclaim or really get in touch with those formative years that we discussed. Because it's something that I don't see, that I miss. Because it's something that I feel that if I was in Africa, for example, I would be able to keep exploring. But it might not pay the bills, but I would have been able to, I think, continue to engage within that creative process. And then there is the need to also, almost like I feel like it's a responsibility for me to share the things that I've learned through these formative years, and also to share the references that I grew up, particularly the references of, as I was, we talked about earlier, growing up around this really the beautiful that I was raised by women. And I just remember just really every time they were going out, every time they would do something, there was this I guess transformation of the, you know, through adornments, through clothes, and through how they would wear their hair. And visually for me that was really beautiful and stunning. But there is a need for me to share that as well. I'm like, oh my God, I grew up around women who are really beautiful. And this is, so that I guess these are all already intrinsic, already embodied things that in my work, they come through without necessarily me digging deep. As in, they just enhance what it is I'm trying to research. So I guess, linking this to dandyism, for example, when I used to go to school growing up in Kigali, I used to pass through this neighborhood that was, it was actually called, it's called Kanzayir, which is the area where most Congolese people who immigrated, I think in the 70s, who live in that area. And I just remember going to school and seeing these beautifully dressed people, but having pretty much nothing. And that was the first introduction of this idea of dressing up and pretty much not having anything. But because I thought, oh yeah, you have to dress well if you have money, you have to dress well if you have a car to travel. You can't just dress like this and walk. So this idea of, oh, wow, these people can do this. And then I was really inspired by the way they transformed a suit. So the idea of a suit was so something. I thought, oh my God, the colors, the suit, it doesn't just have to be gray or black, or and the trousers, the way they would wear trousers, it was almost touching the chest. So I was really inspired by how they would deconstruct and transform clothes, which I didn't see in my family, because my family was very, I guess, very more reserved, but very much I guess, a bit toned down, but very elegant. But I was like, oh my God, there's fun here. There's so much fun in the way these Congolese people wear clothes. So yeah, and then I remember thinking, this is more theatrical for me. And I wanted to really embody that in dandyism.
I'm curious, as you talk about your lived experiences, those very powerful moments then ended up informing the ideologies and the conversations that you wish to share through your work. What are some of those ideologies? What are some of the statements that you wish for your work to say when it's being presented?
I often think of beauty as something you have to claim and reclaim, but also something that you have to present in a way that is not conventional for me. And when I think about, for example, those women I was referring to, and also thinking about, as much as they inspired me, but they also pulled me away, because the systems they also lived in, as in, a man should be this, you know, you should be doing this in order to become this, and then being confused about, how am I going to learn from people I hardly see? How am I supposed to be this ideology, this idea they have of me, when I don't have any reference of that? And so there was this confusion of things just running in my head as I was growing up, knowing that, oh, I'm really, you know, inspired by this, trying my grandparents' scarves, they were really beautiful, but then also being discouraged not to try that. So, and then as one grows up and you become comfortable and you start learning that actually this was just, they are just conditioned to be the way, or to see the world in a certain way. And you I guess the benefits of me living here is the fact that I was in the Western world, is being exposed to so many different ways of being, you know, which is very, I would say, it's encouraged to be an individual, it's encouraged to express yourself, but also not, I wouldn't say fully, but it's something that is, you can do and not be fearful. And I was also lucky to be part of creative pieces and works that really encouraged me to be myself. And so through that, I started learning that, oh my God, I'm not just this one thing. I'm so many things. You start discovering that how you see the world is through a lens that is conditioned, but actually it's okay. You can twist it. You can take this apart. You can make it be about you and about who you were, and then about who inspired you. And then you start this. So it kind of, now you do a full circle where those references and those influential figures, you really honor them because now you understand them. And so within dandyism, you know, specifically speaking to this idea of gender roles, I was like, I'm just gonna deconstruct the whole gender roles. I'm just gonna bring in these beautiful, colorful clothes that the Congolese neighborhood I had around me when I was going to school would just be this flamboyant and loud and very expressive, with the reserved and very much this way of being elegant, but also without being loud. And I was like, I really want to merge this. I want to be able to marry these theatricalities, I think they are, really, because it's all about performance, and really be able to then have this other language that I love, which is being flamboyant, but also being elegant, finding a way of not saying much, but through your character and through how you behave and through how you speak, you become this other. But those are my, I guess, parameters in terms of in thinking about who I am as an artist, in thinking about identity and how identity is expressed, also in thinking about these figures that inspired me in those formative years.
In those discoveries, I find that there is an awareness, but also a great freedom.
Oh my God, I think you just nailed it. It's the freedom that comes from, because once you pass the confusion stage where you thought, oh, this is what I should be because that's what I'm being told, but I really loved it, I would rather be this. But once you pass that and you find the freedom, you are unstoppable because you can see what's possible. And I think that's why dandyism has been, I guess, for me, important work for me as an artist, but also it became a mirror for me to see the society, because I was like, oh, actually people can connect to this work because it speaks to humanity. Again, going to Ubuntu, it just speaks to, they're just performers who are having a great time, but also really exploring the idea of humanity and engaging with each other in a very much engaging with each other in a human to human without any preconceived any ideas or of what this should be or what this one should be and how this one should present and how this other one should present. And so I tried to also engage with my performers. I call them collaborators because I encourage them to be themselves in the work. And also speaking to these, and really I encourage them to bring in their mother tongue, to bring in their cultural references so that we really speak to these references that we embody, that we have. Because we live in a Western environment, we will have to, it's just part of the work. The work is going to happen in this, you know, environment, and we can't speak to this environment, yeah.
Ziza, coming up this season at Luminato Festival and running from June 7th to the 15th and making its Canadian premiere. Wow. Dandyism, which we began to speak about before the break, is appearing across the city. And the work itself will address, as you shared, identity, heritage, pride, and also the embodiment of aesthetics. So talk to us about the meaning of dandyism and the work that will be presented.
So the meaning of dandyism for me in the context of the research that I made in early days, as I touched on as well, you know, having this influence figures of these Congolese people that I was witnessing growing up. It also came from the LASAP. LASAP. So LASAP is La Société des Ambianceurs et des Personnes Élégantes. I think my French is really not as good as it used to be, which is the Society of Ambience Makers and Elegant People in English, is a movement that, for me, how I understand it, that began as soon as the Western colonizers set their foot in Africa. Because the suit, as we know it, is not really an African. It's not, the suit is a Western attire. And so doing the research, because I was exposed to the Congolese people, but I also, now I was in a position where, like, oh, actually now, well, let's trace this back. How did this begin? And then you understand that it was actually, it was through the French colonial masters and their houseboys. They would give them the clothes, and then the houseboys would change the clothes, and they would want to kind, you know, change the clothes and deconstruct what those outfits would be like, and they would just make them those outfits their own. But it just didn't stop there. But then they would also then start almost competing amongst themselves, who's best dressed, who's well spoken, who speaks better French. And on top of that, their slave masters would then prefer the houseboys who are well dressed and also who spoke better French. But of course, it evolved. It evolved to become a movement where these men, now women can be dandies, where these men would really take it too far. You know, as in they would just save money entire year to just buy one outfit. But I think for me, what it speaks to fundamentally is this idea of reclaiming, like being able to do with what you're given, but create joy within that. And to me, that's dandyism in the African context, in the LASAP movement, which is more specifically about the Congolese men, which is, that's the specifically what inspired the work. Is this idea of creating a way to survive and to then find beauty within that and then present that within the society and the community you live in. So I was like, oh my God, this is so, I was just really interested and moved by that. But not only to do that, but when they do that, they have these characters that they invent, and the way they present them, that those characters, and then the way they present the outfit, each accessory has to be shown in a way that is just very theatrical. And of course, as a person who loves performance and dance, I think that to me the concept and the inception of dandyism was very much based on these specific men from Brazzaville and Kinshasa, and how they presented these outfits. I just thought it was so beautiful. And then, of course, the Western world discovered them, and they started really being inspired by how phenomenon this is. And then there was a Guinness, advert that happened, I think, 14 years ago, about 10 years ago, which again spoke to LASAP as a movement, which is, and then obviously Guinness used that LASAP, and then they created this advert that was actually very popular. So yeah, I'm really inspired by specifically more about the Congolese men in those early days. I can speak more about more further research that I've done, but I think that's more specifically about the idea behind dandyism being a dance performance for me. And so the another thing that I was really interested in was this the concept of appropriation, and how and can also have a negative connotation to it. But then I really started digging deep, and I was inspired by the Macaronis. So the Macaronis were this group of the Notability Society in England, who would embark on these European grand tours in the 17th and the 18th century. And these European tours were meant for them to learn about history of Europe, literature, art, but also entertainment. But also through that, they would be exposed to what I call fine clothes, fine dressing. And the Macaronis, they call themselves Macaronis because they would come back from Italy with, you know, beautiful clothes. You know, you would have, like, let's say, less ruffles, you know, spewing out of cuffs and also the collars, and then they will have these embroidered waistcoats, and they will have these beautiful coats which you open and then you reveal this beautiful expensive silk. So, but they took this whole movement for me even further, because I think they went as far as to be, they were wearing makeup, they were wearing big wigs. So they are actually, for me, the first to really put this idea of the gender, the men and the women should be this. They just threw that out of the window and just really became these men who are not scared of color, who are not scared of makeup, who are not scared of heels. And then the dandy comes after that as a way of, oh, this has to be a little bit toned down. You have to wear a very much a well, you know, tailored and suited kind of suit, and then how you behave as a gentleman had to evolve as a way of, no, you know, less makeup. So yeah, but I was really interested in understanding clothes and then appropriation. Is it really appropriation, or is it that the idea of human being exposed to different cultures, inevitably you get to take, or you get to learn, or you get to be inspired, and you take from these cultures you are exposed to? So it was also as a way of starting these dialogues. Do we appropriate, or are we inspired? But also using fashion as a way of as an empowerment movement, but as a way of showing what's possible, and as a way of twisting the narratives. Another thing for me that was very important was to look at fashion. So for example, there was the Zoot Suit riots, for example, which happened on the West Coast during the Second World War. The idea of using fashion as a way of to protest, to show racial inequalities, which was happening in America. So really understanding how fashion can be used as a weapon to reveal what's happening within society, and to reveal the systems that are actually oppressing people. So for me, this research, bringing all this research together as a way of understanding fashion, and a way of and appropriation, and how do we discern appropriation, and just being influenced by the cultures you are exposed to. And I guess the way as we continue to connect worldwide, you can't just say that, oh, this is for certain culture, you shouldn't wear it, or this is, of course there are certain things that I see I'm like, okay, this is a bit too far. But at the same time, how can we discern how to wear pieces of clothes, especially when you are exposed to those cultures? But yeah, the idea of the understanding the fashion, particularly in the elites, in the aristocracy, in England, because they had to be exposed to these grand, by going through these grand tours, being in Europe and France, and being able to come back with this fine clothing, and then appropriating that, and then within that also creating these clubs, just like the African dandies would do, and then they would meet in these places, and then they would compete, and then they would just be with each other. It's also something that I thought, oh, actually, this also speaks to the work, to dandyism as a performance piece, just as a way of bringing these other layers. And I guess dramatic historical moments that I thought would be appropriate to include in the work.
So that as you consider the relationships between fashion, resistance, revolution, what have you discovered as you have created the work?
I have The beauty around dandyism is that it because it's an outdoor piece, it changes. Every performance is different, but also within every performance, for me, for example, I try to speak to current issues or to current things that are happening without being didactic, without feeling like I have to teach a lesson. I try to find a way of weaving in stories or climate or political climate or social climate of what's happening in nuanced and more in a way that is inviting. So for example, I'm very much inspired by this Kenyan MP called Millie Odhiambo, and she is a force to reckon with in the Kenyan parliament, and she's not scared. She was one of the first women to become an MP and also a lawyer, and she's just inspired me so much. So I took that character, and talking about appropriation, and kind of played with it and added more references of what's happening today. And so I have within the work that we try to weave in these, because we find that when we capture the audience, they are interested. So I thought to continue, and I also feel like it's maybe a responsibility that I have as also someone who's invested and who's moved by a lot of things that are happening. I feel like it's my duty as a performer, I owe it to myself to also speak about these things, but in a way that is not necessarily pushing people away, but it's more like I am as affected as anyone else who's watching the work. So it's also about allowing myself to be human in my own work. But through that, bringing, knowing that it's a platform that actually, yeah, I have a platform, I can also speak about these issues, but using characterization and movement and dance and music and sound and songs and singing, all these things can happen in just one live experience. So I try to weave in all these issues through fashion. So I guess it's also speaking about the Zoot Suit riots. It's also that I'm doing exactly the same thing, but fashion and dance and performance and spoken word and music. And yeah, so I guess that's what I'm doing. That's pretty much, I'm continuing that legacy in a way that is inviting and that wants the audience to be part of that work. And also through the workshops, because I do the workshops as well as part of the I will be doing some workshops as part of the Luminato. And within the workshop, I bring a little bit of history. I try to talk about, you know, more specifically about African dandyism and the influences behind it. And then try to also weave that, you know, when I encourage the group, the participants to also, you know, dress each other as if you are, you know, this and this and that. So we find a way of being playful, but also really bringing in these conversations and dialogues.
Excellent. We are looking so forward to sharing time, space, rhythm, history, heritage with you.
Oh, thank you.
And
so
all
thank you.
When dandyism comes to Toronto during the festival, what a great pleasure again it was to be in conversation.
Oh.
A great pleasure, truly, to be in conversation with you today. Ziza, thank you.
Thank
for
you so
sharing
much.
With us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this conversation and amazing questions. Thought so much about the work. I feel like, oh yeah, I'm renewed. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. I indeed feel renewed as well. Such a joy, truly, to be in conversation with you. Thank you. Again,
thank you so
Ziza, for being here. I look forward to seeing you again very soon.
Yes, please come and see the show if you can.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it. Thank you,
so
Ziza.
Thank you. Take care.
Welcome back to Turnout Radio. That was the wonderful Ziza Patrick. So great to be in conversation with Ziza today. Now, if you missed the top of the interview, we invite you to visit turnoutradio.com, CIUT.fm, and some of your favorite podcast platforms, where the episode will soon be streaming. Coming up this season and presented by Luminato Festival, a work that is part fashion statement and part dance revolution. Dandyism makes its Canadian debut across Toronto with free shows in Toronto and Brampton. Created by Ziza Patrick, Dandyism runs from June 7th straight through to the 15th with performances and also workshops, which include movement and poetry and fashion sewing basics. You can learn more by visiting luminatofestival.com. Now, during this Sound of Your City fundraising campaign, we want to thank you for your kind donations, which will continue to assist Turnout Radio and CIUT in building upon our programming efforts and our work in service to you. To share a donation of any amount during the campaign, we invite you to call CIUT at 416-946-7800 or toll free at 1-888-204-8976, or you can donate online at CIUT.fm. We appreciate you for sharing the love and for joining our family of collaborators. Well, this brings us to a close of today's program. Thank you for sharing time and rhythm with us. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, and as always, I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.